Today, inside the US college admissions scandal, which has already put one actor behind bars, and the dramatic collapse of tour operator Thomas Cook.
My name is Rick Singer. My job is to life coach kids and families through the whole process of getting into college. It is so competitive to get your kid into school today.
Rick Singer is right. Getting into a top university is competitive, and he should know. He was a highly sought-after personal tutor who helped wealthy families win their kids a place at America's best colleges.
We've got this breaking news. Federal authorities, though, at this very hour, are on the hunt, armed with an arrest warrant for Full House actress Lori Loughlin. She's among 50 wealthy parents swept up and indicted in a massive sting operation. They're calling it this Ivy League scandal. It is sending shockwaves across the country.
The college admissions scandal is the largest of its kind in America, involving 33 parents paying millions of dollars to Rick Singer, who, with a network of test takers and college staff, helped them cheat their children into elite universities. For the past few months, Evgenia Peretz, a Hollywood screenwriter and contributing editor at Vanity Fair, has been investigating the scandal, uncovering details which wouldn't be out of place in the plot of one of her films.
Yeah, this certainly is crazier than fiction in a certain way. Just the mere fact that this one man was able to mastermind something so vast, and also just this kind of grotesque behavior on the part of parents.
As those involved are now being given prison sentences, like Hollywood actor Felicity Huffman.
On Friday, the actress was sentenced to 14 days in prison, some college students calling the judgment too lenient.
The scandal raises questions about the role big money plays in guaranteeing students a top education, regardless of their academic abilities. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, Rick Singer and the US college admissions scandal. This story and this scandal begins with William Singer, who's known as Rick, and he'd been a college tutor for years, and his clients live mostly in California. Can you tell me a bit about them? What are they like?
So most of the parents that he targeted were in either Los Angeles or the Bay Area. So that would be, you know, Silicon Valley, San Francisco. So these are areas that are extremely affluent, very status conscious-y parents, and, you know, wanting to be seen to be having the best of everything. Sad to say, these are parents who I think valued the labels of colleges more than perhaps the education in and of itself. You know, these are the sort of places where it's really important what kind of car you're driving. The right college is just another possession in a certain way.
So they're obviously wealthy, but what industries do they work in?
They were CEOs, they were money managers, they were top lawyers. There were a couple of actors, as we know.
The more recognizable names on the indictment are actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin. Huffman starred on ABC's Desperate Housewives, and Loughlin is best known for her role on Full House.
These were affluent, powerful people who were admired in their communities and sort of pillars of the communities.
Which colleges were these people trying to get their kids into?
Georgetown and Yale were probably the, you know, highest tier of the schools that were ensnared in this. Stanford was also implicated. That's in California, and that's considered, you know, Ivy plus.
I am more convinced than ever that this is the best university on the face of the planet.
Not technically one of the Ivies, but it may as well been. And then USC in California.
The University of Southern California, a place like no other.
Fire! Was the one that most of the families involved were seeking.
How difficult is it to get a place ordinarily in these kind of top schools?
you have to have perfect SAT scores, you know, probably straight A's. You have to have a, you know, as an applicant, a passion for something that you've really been pursuing for a couple of years in your free time. Yeah, I mean, these are competitive schools.
And so I imagine private tutoring must be big business.
You know, once one person is using the outside tutor, then more people do. And then it becomes sort of like, well, if they're doing it, my kid has to do it too, because they have to be competitive. And it becomes a bit of like an arms race for college counseling.
And the best man, if you're a parent looking to get your kid into a great school and you're not necessarily 100% confident in their academic ability, is Rick Singer.
Saturday night, it's an amazing night. Why? Because mom and dad go to a dinner party. They hear about every kid who's doing, getting into this school, going to this summer program, doing this, doing that. Sunday morning, my phone rings off the hook. Why? How come we're not doing this?
So Rick Singer was a college counselor who for decades had had a sort of, he had had various college counseling services.
Hi, my name is Rick Singer and I'm the founder of The Key. As a father myself, I understand the stress the college admissions process can put on your family.
And he was doing it legitimately for a long time. But even when I say legitimately, his reputation was, he was very pushy. He was a real salesman.
My key method unlocks the full potential of your son or daughter and sets them on a course to excel in life.
Once he vibed from the parents that they were desperate enough to go the extra mile for their kid, he would offer them his cheating services, basically.
I mean, what are these cheating services? How do you cheat your way into an Ivy League university?
There were two main ways that he operated his cheating scheme. The first way was through fraudulent testing. This way involved a number of co-conspirators. So he had a guy who was a sort of master test taker. And this guy would literally fly in to one of two testing spots. So the test taker would literally go in after the kid had taken his SAT and change the answers so that he would get the number that Rick Singer and the parent desired.
The former Harvard graduate would secretly take the exams in place of actual students, with some parents even providing samples of their children's handwriting.
And then hand that test to the administrator, who was also in on the scheme. That was it. And then there was the fraudulent athletic recruitment scheme. So he essentially worked with coaches from a number of colleges, creating false profiles of students. So students who would have no experience playing soccer or tennis, they would suddenly decide, with the parents' cooperation, we're going to make this child, we're going to pretend that this kid is an incredible tennis player. And you, as the coach, are going to say that this child is going to be one of your recruits. And then the admissions committee at wherever the college is going to say, fine, we don't need to really examine this applicant any further, and done deal. So those were the two methods that he used.
This guy would Photoshop their heads on the bodies of high school athletes, and a number of universities were duped.
So they would actually doctor photos to make it look like these kids were playing the sports that they were trying to get into the university for. And this could work because, as I understand it, they weren't required to even play the sport when they got there.
Yes, that's probably the most kind of grotesque and just absurd aspect of this whole story.
Yeah.
Is the doctoring of the photos of their children. I mean, it just like boggles the mind.
Yeah.
How these parents could do this and be okay with themselves. One of the guys I wrote about, and this is all in the indictment, they decided that the son would be a water polo player. And so he photoshopped a picture of him, of his face on a water polo player, but then, you know, he did it wrong and Rick Singer came back and said the position's wrong and no one could get that high out of the water. And went back. I mean, it was very involved.
But it kind of just demonstrates perhaps the power that Rick Singer had over these parents. Like, I'm even imagining my own parents who have no grasp of Photoshop, or perhaps some of these parents going to these ridiculous lengths to make their kid look like they're amazing at water polo.
Yeah, the water polo thing, I mean, it's so embarrassing.
It is comical, and it's ironic that he said that would make your application more legitimate.
Yeah.
But this wasn't just Singer on his own, was it? He had a team of people from within the college system who were making money, and a lot of money, trying to help him get these students in.
Well, I should say allegedly, because some of them have pled not guilty. The allegation is that they had pocketed a chunk of this money. So the money would go from the parents to Rick Singer through his foundation. And then Rick Singer would pay a chunk of it to the coaches themselves.
I mean, obviously, up until the point where he got caught, was he successful in getting a lot of students into universities through cheating?
He bragged in conversations that were wiretapped, saying, "Don't worry, I've done this like 700 times." I think that number is like wildly overblown, because I think if there were 700, we would have more than the 33 parents that we have now. And there were rumors for a while that there was going to be a whole bunch of other parents getting dragged into it. But I'm not sure at this point if that is going to happen.
For 6 years, Rick Singer seemed to fly under the radar, and he ran this successful, what was essentially a cheating business. But cracks began to show around sort of 2017 and 2018 as staff at some of these schools started noticing some discrepancies in a few of their students' university applications. Can you tell us a bit about Julie Taylor Vaz?
Buckley in Los Angeles was one of the schools that Rick Singer targeted. And Julie Taylor Vaz was the college guidance counselor at the Buckley School. And she noticed in 2017 some very strange things. With one of the child's application, she was speaking with the college and they said, you know, we're taking this amazing water polo player. And she was like, we don't have water polo. I'm not really sure what you're talking about. The family got, you know, very indignant that she dared to raise any question about that. Of course, they were this was a fraudulent application, so it's a bit ironic that they were the ones being indignant. Then that same year, this same guidance counselor was on the phone with another admissions person from Tulane, and Tulane said, oh, we would be really delighted to take this girl who is African-American and whose parents never went to college. The guidance counselor knew that this girl was not African American. Her dad was on the board. So the school did some more digging into this kid's applications at other schools. And then it turned out that at Georgetown, she was applying as an African American tennis wonder and as a recruit. Now, in this particular case, the family, they were called out on it. They were questioned about this. And they said, they admitted, okay, we were working with Rick Singer. He must have gotten into her application and changed this.
But while Taylor Vaz was making her inquiries and was chasing up these slightly odd applications, what she didn't know was that the authorities were already on the case, because they had begun an investigation into one of the parents who had used the scheme, a man called Maury Tobin.
Only on CBS2, the man believed to have tipped the feds off to this massive college admission scandal lives right here in LA.
And our investigative reporter, David Goldstein, tracked him down today.
Mr. Tobin, can I talk with you a second? Why are you running, sir?
How does he become the man who gives the game away?
The FBI, they were investigating Maury Tobin for a completely unrelated scheme. He was a financier and he was involved in a classic pump and dump stock scheme with a couple of other guys. They arrested him one night for this scheme. So he was facing a stiff sentence for this other crime, and he offered up that he knew about a coach at Yale who was taking bribes for soccer spots. And how did he know this? Because he was actually one of the bribers. And so he went into a room with the soccer coach from Yale, Rudy Meredith. The room was wired. And over the course of this conversation, the name Rick Singer comes up. Rudy Meredith mentions the name Rick Singer as someone who is in his world. This was a name the FBI had not heard of. Suddenly, this whole new case is open to them, and this is what leads them to start tapping Rick Singer's phone. Then they arrest Rick Singer. He cooperates with the FBI. And then Rick Singer starts having conversations with the various parents, getting them to sort of admit on tape, secretively, what they have been doing with him.
So through Maury Tobin, the FBI finds Rick Singer. And Rick Singer immediately names names, providing information to an FBI investigation beautifully called Operation Varsity Blues. When does it all come to a head?
So the world basically learned about this the 12th of March, 2019. This was the day that all of these parents were arrested on that same day. And, you know, it was hugely dramatic in these communities. I mean, literally the police showing up, you know, guns drawn at rich people's houses.
Actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin are headed from the red carpet to federal court.
News alert now, a nationwide college admissions cheating scam.
Bombshell allegations implicating 33 rich and powerful parents.
How did the children react to what their parents had done?
This is what I was thinking about from day one, really, was how a child, I mean, particularly one who did not know what his or her parents were doing, how a child could just deal with that. Just the amount of rage, confusion, embarrassment, humiliation, just feeling like you're going to be an object of scorn and ridicule because of what your parents did. I mean, it's just really a kind of unspeakable thing to do to a child. And, you know, I don't think these parents ever thought in a million years that this was going to become exposed. But, you know, for the kids who did not know about this, I feel terrible for them.
Court papers tell us that some students were aware of the scam and some have lost their places. Others have remained at their universities as there is no evidence they knew what was going on. And as for Rick Singer, he pled guilty and is waiting to be sentenced. Of the 33 parents who were charged, 19, including actor Lori Loughlin, are pleading not guilty, so their cases will go to trial. Felicity Huffman, who pled guilty, was the first to be sentenced. Next month, she'll spend 2 weeks in prison and has to pay a $30,000 fine.
Noting the celebrities' fame and wealth, the prosecutor hammered home, there's no paparazzi in prison. Prison is the great equalizer.
I was really struck by a letter Felicity Huffman submitted to the court in which she said, in my desperation to be a good mother, I talked myself into believing that all I was doing was giving my daughter a fair shot. And I see the irony in that statement now because what I have done is the opposite of fair. I have broken the law, deceived the educational community, betrayed my daughter, and failed my family. How is her role in this scandal being viewed?
So I think Felicity Huffman has sort of been seen throughout this as the kind of model of how one implicated in this should behave. She was one of the first, if not the first, I think, to come out and take responsibility for what she did. She pled guilty. She kept her head down, and she really expressed shame and remorse.
I understand that another way to get a place at certain universities in America is to make a sizable donation to them. I mean, why didn't the parents involved in this scandal just do something like that?
There is a sort of legitimate, quote unquote, backdoor way, which is that one's parents will make a whopping donation or buy a building, you know, spend whatever, $5 million to get their kid in. And so, yes, that is a case of someone buying their way in. That is legit, and that's done, and that is accepted. Whether, you know, we like it or not, that's totally legal. These were families that didn't have those connections. These aren't billionaires. They're, like, for the most part, multi-millionaires.
It's kind of shocking that there are these systems that ostensibly allow people to buy their way in. How do the universities justify this?
This is a calculation that universities have to make to have a healthy endowment and, you know, to be able to have a healthy scholarship system. So at least in those cases, the colleges are benefiting and it's not just a personal bribe. But it's definitely complicated. And yes, I mean, I think it's very obvious that wealth does give one such an enormous advantage in terms of college admissions. I mean, there's no question about that. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. And I don't think the Rick Singer story will have any impact on that whatsoever.
Evgenia, thank you so much for speaking to me.
Sure, thank you.
You can read Evgenia's investigation in Vanity Fair. Coming up, passengers stranded and 9,000 jobs at risk. Where did it all go wrong for Thomas Cook? Now, after 178 years in business, Thomas Cook is no more.
A bit emotional, very emotional. The cabin crew all crying, a bit somber, to be honest. It's, for a company that big, and to be going that long to go under, I think it's a bit devastating.
As soon as we landed, they were all crying. It's devastating. It's a legacy. It's gone.
Where were you flying to this morning?
Cancun, Mexico, on our honeymoon.
150,000 passengers were left stranded after the company went into administration at 2 a.m. on Monday morning, triggering the UK's largest ever peacetime repatriation. The Guardian's business correspondent, Rob Davies, explains why Thomas Cook collapsed.
I mean, it's a desperately sad day. We're talking about, I would say, one of the largest corporate failures in British history. In terms of high street names that everybody knows that have disappeared, you would put it up there alongside BHS, Woolworths. But I would say there's an added element to this. You know, while it was very sad that Woolworths went, that was during the financial crisis, you know, nobody got married in a Woolworths. Nobody met their future spouse in a Woolworths. Whereas Thomas Cook occupies a slightly different place in people's hearts. You know, there are millions of people who have happy memories that are associated with holidays that they took with Thomas Cook. This is a 178-year-old company. All of that history has now come to an end. I mean, it's desperately sad. It's definitely the case that Thomas Cook failed to an extent to move with the times. The way people book their holidays has certainly changed in the last 10 or 20 years with the rise of the internet. But I think we have to go back a little bit further than that and ask ourselves why Thomas Cook didn't change. And one of the reasons it wasn't able to invest in becoming fit for the future is that it just had huge amounts of debt. It nearly failed in 2011, partly as a result of debts it had then. Every year you're paying interest on that debt, and that's money that you could be spending on making the business fit for the future. I spoke to somebody at Thomas Cook earlier this week who said that of the 11 million holidays that they sell every year, 3 million of those, the profit they made on 3 million of those, was simply going out the back door on interest payments. So I think debt really is the main story behind why Thomas Cook has failed. Looking at the short-term reasons, you could certainly throw the climate crisis in there because last summer's unseasonably hot weather was certainly part of it. I mean, the company complained at the time that people were either delaying holidays or foregoing them altogether because they figured, why not just save money and stay in the UK and enjoy the heat wave here? Alongside that, you could probably put Brexit. That's had some effect on the company. Obviously, the weakness of sterling. People are perhaps more reluctant to go on holiday. It's going to cost them more. They're not quite sure what the economy is going to be. So that's another factor. But it's the sort of factor that some of Thomas Cook's competitors, who aren't in the greatest of shape but are not failing, they're dealing with those factors. It's a tough question to say whether the government should have stepped in. I mean, I think the argument that the government would make is that it would have been throwing good money after bad. I mean, fundamentally, this was a bad business. I can't really think of any timeline in which Thomas Cook wouldn't have gone bust. The question is when it would have happened. As things stand, the government is orchestrating what is the largest repatriation effort in peacetime history in the UK. I think the number of people that they're trying to move is close to half the number of soldiers that were moved at Dunkirk. So it's an absolutely huge operation. The government is going to be chartering aircraft wherever it can get its hands on them to try and bring people home. And that's going to cost a lot of money. I mean, conservative estimates suggest it'll be around 100 million. I've heard estimates much higher than that. The taxpayer's going to bear that.
That was Rob Davies. My thanks to him and to Evgenia Peretz. Today's episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin and Gary Marshall. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. Anishka will be back with you tomorrow.